Places, please. Places for the top of Theater Countdown.
Well, I'll tell you what I know. We'll always be countdown buddies, friends, sisters, and pals. Hi, everyone. You're listening to Theater Countdown Podcast, the razzly dazzliest, show busiest countdown about theater in all of Theater Countdown land. It's me, your probably buddy Ben Cameron, here with my good Judy Juddy, Michael Judson Berry.
Hello. My God, you're so good at the intros. I just tell you, like, you should just MC everything, including Pippin.
I would like to do that.
And everyone who has a top hat and a person who moves the show along.
So that I could be the Cat in the Hat, I could be the MC, I could be the leading player. What other roles are available to me in this world? Barnum? Which I have done. I did Man in Chair in my return to theater after about 17 years away from the boards. I did, a couple of years ago, I did Man in Chair in Drowsy Chaperone at a theater that I love in Massachusetts, in Franklin, Massachusetts. And it was a whirlwind thing. I went up for like 4 days before we put the show on and did the show over the course of a weekend. And it was so much fun and absolutely terrifying. Because that guy in that chair talks a lot. Michael, are you there? No, Michael's gone. Actually, Michael's straight up gone. I was losing my confidence as I was monologuing because I didn't feel like he was responding to me. It turns out he left the business. You hate my Man in Chair? What's going on here?
Just the thought of it made me just, I had to run and listen to the original cast album real quick just to sort of like sponge my brain. No, my computer just decided to turn off and turn back on again. It was really
cute. You're so good, though. Did you see how easily you said cast album recording just then? It just tripped off your tongue.
I've been practicing like back in real life, you know.
Oh.
All right. Sorry. Anyway. Shall we try that again? Where were we?
I went to Massachusetts, this great little theater in Massachusetts, the Franklin Performing Arts Company.
Ooh.
And I got up there. And I had gotten the script a few, you know, probably a month before. But like any reasonable actor, I didn't bother to open it until the pressure was really on.
Obviously.
And there are so very many words that the man in the chair has to say throughout the show.
Uh-huh.
Like, it was such a wild experience, A, to like actually be back on stage as an actor. Although, let's be honest, the lines between who I actually am as a person and Man in Chair are very blurry. Yeah. if we're being real.
Uh-huh.
Which is maybe why they asked me to do it. But what was interesting about it was the spectrum of emotions that I felt doing this thing. So I was only there for like 4 days to actually rehearse with the cast. Mm-hmm. Because you don't really interact with anybody, so
they can
stage everything and just plot you into a couple moments. Mm-hmm. But it was wild in that I had every actor emotion you could possibly have. There were times when I was like, oh my God, I'm actually a genius. I've always known this, and they're so lucky to have me. This audience must be in hog. This audience is doing everything they can not to boo me off the stage. And my castmates hate me because I can hear them backstage, and so they must be talking about how terrible I am. But then they were all nice to my face, and that was a plot. But then I was like, no, they adore me. I'm a leader. So the point is, actor friends, I'm as crazy as you are.
I think that's a requirement.
100%.
Yeah.
But it made me fall in love with that show in a really special way.
I was just talking about that show because I just saw Lempicka.
Wait, did we see it the same night?
We saw it the same night. How did we not see each other? I saw your Instagram post and I was there.
I will tell you how we didn't see each other.
You saw me and ran. It's fine.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, like you did when I was telling my story about my return to the stage.
I did.
Mr. Boyfriend had entered like a telecharge lottery, and so he won it, and we got the seats in like literally the last three rows of the balcony. We were quite far away, partial view. Uh-huh. So I was like, I think that's a boob. I can't really tell. but that looks like an Art Deco boob, maybe. Lempicka. Yeah.
There were a few of those.
Yes. It's obviously not where I'm accustomed to sitting.
At the theater. Clearly.
You with as the a Broadway. With the plebeians. I'm assuming you were somewhere near the orchestra.
I was in the orchestra, yes.
Also, that theater, the Longacre Theater, is a hike, man. That goes up and up and up. Like, it's not like you get to the mezzanine and the balcony is an extension of the mezzanine. They're like, no, you're poor. Take the stairs up again.
Well, to the point where you can't even see the balcony from the orchestra. Because I remember, like...
Well, that's why we didn't see each other.
The last show I saw in that theater was Diana. And I had a friend who worked on it who got me center first row mezzanine seats.
Let's be honest, there were seats available.
I loved Diana, to be fair. That was one of my favorite theater-going experiences.
We... are an absolute.
Oh, we've talked
on
about
that.
This.
Yeah. No. We are on the same Diana page.
Yeah. And then Lempicka. I remember we walked in and I sort of looked up because I loved the theaters are also beautiful on Broadway. A lot of them. You know, you look around and you're just like, ugh, gorgeous. And I did look up and I remember having a thought of like, oh, there's no balcony here. There's just a mezzanine anyway, and like sat down. I think it's like back a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah. It is. It's way back. The back. You have to take a back staircase. You walk through another alley. You hop on a bird.
They hand you a vacuum. They're like, could you clean a little while you're here? you all of a sudden are Irish, and you're just like, hello, my lady. Like, you know, they're calling you Queenie.
Which I respond very positively to. I was
same.
Okay,
I aspire to be a Cockney maid.
I don't think you're never more than a stone's throw from being full Cockney maid, as far as I'm concerned.
Listen, let's be real. Just ask my boyfriend. But yeah, also,
all I want is a room somewhere.
We were literally cleaning this morning, and I was like, so, I'm doing on the scrubbing. He was just like, I'm going to need you to leave and record your podcast. Like, just walk away from me.
Repeat after me. The grunge in the couch stays mainly on the plunge.
Yeah. Is it bad though? So back to you, Lempicka. All I can think whenever I say Lempicka, I feel like I sound like Donald Trump. Lempicka. You know, I've seen the best Lempicka that ever Lempicka'd on Broadway. It's the most Lempicka thing. Like, it just sounds like such a Trump word.
Yeah.
And I hope that doesn't get out there because people won't want to see Lempicka. But I went to Topeka. And it's Olympica.
The Atchison, Topeka.
And I
and
heard
the Santa Fe.
The cast album on the speaker.
I heard next they're touring China. So that's exciting. The Chinese tour.
Oh, lovely. But yeah, I had a great time though. Those ladies, they were
belting. Oh my
God. They were belting. There are more 11 o'clock numbers over the course of that. Like, you walk in and you're like, is it 11 o'clock? Because it opens with 11 o'clock numbers.
Do you know who I thought was real? I mean, obviously Eden Espinosa, like, they wrote this score and they're like, well, only Eden can do it. And they're right about
maybe.
That. Yeah. And, George Aboud, who plays the futurist Italian painter whose name is like Maserati or something.
Yes.
Marietti.
He is
Marietti.
Off the charts. Marietti.
He is so good.
He's incredible in the show.
And it's a weird part that you're like, I guess I need him because he kind of does the thing that the MC does in Cabaret at the end.
Speaking
kind
of roles that you would do.
I could play futuristic painters.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just thought he was tremendous in a very odd role. I just thought he was absolutely stellar.
Yeah.
And I remember him.
Wacky well.
Did you ever see Emoji Land?
No. And I heard it was really fun.
There's a musical called Emoji Land that was completely bonkers. He played one of the emojis. He was like the lead emoji, but like he was kind of the heart and soul of it. Also kind of narrating. Maybe I just want to be George Aboud.
Maybe. They're worse people.
Absolutely. They're worse folks I could be.
Then George Abood.
George Abood in Lempicki.
Lempicki.
Turn Lempicka.
Oh, but all that to say too, oh wait, we have Intel.
Yeah.
He played the emoji nerdy. With the
nerdy
glasses,
emoji.
The little smile. Yeah.
Nerdy emoji. He played.
And you have glasses. You are currently bespectacled, so I see why you want to play this role.
Yeah.
You're already halfway there.
Yeah. That's all it takes. The costume really completes the thing, doesn't it? You know, you can learn the blocking all you want, but until you put that costume on, are you really?
Yeah.
You know.
Are you there?
Are you really there? Are you really?
Are you in the chair? Are you the man?
Raoul.
Without the chair? Yeah.
No.
But oh, with that all back to Drowsy Chaperone. I was like, circle back. How did we get here? Beth Level. Beth Level.
Oh my God. He stole the show.
Lempicka home. Like,
yes, she does.
And it was really cute. She came on and she got applause. And my boyfriend was like, who is she? And I was like, oh, just you wait, Henry Higgins. And she did not disappoint. Like, I was just waiting for her to have a moment.
That one
and
number.
She gets this great song at the end that just breaks your heart. And I was just like,
it does.
That is a legend. And she's so effortless when she comes in and does it. Oh, uh-huh. God, love Beth Level. And talk
and I will
about,
tell you again you know, about Beth Level. And I remember watching her in The Prom, and once again, you put Beth Level in a big finale ensemble moment, and if no matter what the choreography, you're watching Beth Level because she is serving everything so hard.
Oh,
she
yeah.
She is eating and aiding and no crummings and no notings and all of the things.
Mm-hmm.
She is just selling it so hard, and that's what I like. That's what I respond to.
And like, honestly, friends, if you don't know who we're talking about, go YouTube Beth Level Drowsy Chaperone.
Like, and be forever changed.
Yesterday. I remember seeing Drowsy Chaperone. I had no idea who she was. And I was just like, I saw that show three times. And I swear a lot of the time is just to go see her.
And do you know
I loved
thing
that
is?
Show. And I loved that cast.
Brilliant.
But her performance was one of those, you know, just like stars aligned moments.
And the thing is to remember about Beth Level is she was a really renowned, constantly working Broadway actress for for two decades.
Yeah.
Before Drowsy came along and all of a sudden we accepted her as a major theater star. But she
she was in the ensemble and then played like, you know, Anytime Annie in 42nd Street. And like, she was a hoofer. She was a tapper, right?
I don't know this about, but this explains some things.
Yeah, she was in the original casts of Crazy for You and 42nd Street.
Oh.
And she had danced with, she was Anytime Annie, the original Anytime Annie, I want to say, or the first replacement. And then in the original cast of Crazy for You, where she played sort of the wisecracking chorus girl. Like, yeah. I want to say, I might be mixing up my tap shows, but I want to say it was those two. And that's how she ended up with Drowsy Chaperone, because she had worked with Casey Nicholaw back when they both were just like in the ensembles together, and they knew each other from being like dance captains and dance calls and things like that. And so when he was putting that show together, he was like, you know, my buddy Beth Level, I think would be really funny in this. So that's where they went way back as far as like being, you know, chorus kids together.
Changed the course of theater.
Fun nerdy fact about that.
Nerd emoji fact.
Nerd emoji fact.
Wait, whatever happened with your... Didn't you have an audition coming up?
Oh, didn't for Forbidden Broadway.
What did you end up doing? Who did
So again, friends, if you don't know Forbidden Broadway, go look it up.
And listen to
Saturday Night Live to Broadway.
Cast album. They've got a million of them, and they're hilarious!
Yeah, like all of a sudden you'll become the biggest Christine Petty fan that you didn't know you already were. Her Liza One Note goes down in history. So I ended up doing, I had to do a classical quote unquote impression. So anyone like Ethel Merman, Judy Garland, they gave like a list, and then somebody currently on Broadway. Okay. So I did, but I'm me, so I have to do too much. So I did Carol Channing cause I just love her. And I did a whole intro of Carol filming a self tape.
Okay.
And then in that she quotes Katharine Hepburn. So I get to sneak in Katharine Hepburn.
Great.
And then she sings All I Ask of You. And she asks of you. that time when it sharpens, it hardens each and shay shown. Like, And I don't know, I was just riffing, and I did a whole tangent where it's like, I was at an audition, an in-person audition, and I saw Katharine Hepburn. And I just had to go up and I said, Miss Hepburn, you're just divine. And she said to me, you're like a giant cockatoo who is too close to my face. I'm going to need you to step back. And I did.
Bravo.
Thank you. There was so much more. It was so silly and dumb. So I did that and I had a whole outfit, like a bedazzled top and a wig and everything.
Naturally. This is where you really shine.
Yeah, truly. Who was your contemporary? She discovers YouTube. Anyway, and then contemporary was Daniel Radcliffe and Patrick Page and then Beetlejuice. Because I was like, I can do it. So it was Daniel Radcliffe also doing an audition tape, but he does I'll Be Back from Hamilton. Because I was going to do Jonathan Groff and just spit.
Yeah.
But I realized I'm too short. So I was like, actually, if I was going to be anybody in Merrily, I would be Daniel Radcliffe. So I very quickly, so I rewrote the lyrics to I'll Be Back to be about Daniel Radcliffe being back on Broadway. It was an experience. And then Patrick Page cuts him off and then sings a little bit of How Did We Come to This? And then and then Beetlejuice is like, but I like the British guy.
Now I need to know in the day and age. So this sounds like you put 9-10 hours of work into this self-tape.
I did too much. And I already had a bonus episode where it was Moira and Hugh Jackman singing a duet together that I'd done before. So I sent that to... because apparently that got ended up back to Hugh Jackman, and he was like, "Oh, his impression of me was actually really solid."
Just give us a little taste of that. What is that? How does that go?
Oh, I'd have to listen. What did I sing? Once before I go, I want you to know. He's just very here.
Yeah.
That I would do it all again, and he's got that vibrato.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful.
And then Moira was just like, oh, dear Hugh. Hello, you. Felicitations on your annual natal day. Let's perform a song together.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
And
so it's become the Michael Berry show.
I like it. But have you heard anything?
No. The tape was due earlier this week. So who knows how long they're sort of sifting through things.
Have I told you my Titanic audition self-tape story?
No, who were you? I was in for that too. Who were you in for?
For Rose. Not Rose.
For Ruth. Rose? Need to play Ruth. You'd be incredible.
Well, that's what this is, stay tuned for another episode and I'll tell you my self-tape for Titanic moment.
Okay.
Because talk about a return to stage, a return to self-tape, which I had never done before. And it was evil. It was evil. all right, listen. Enough about us. Let's talk about you and what you need in your life. And what you need in your life is to make sure you're following us on our socials at Theater Countdown, Theater with an R-E, because we're bougie AF.
Yes.
And so are you, theater friend. So make sure you're following us. You can rate and review us. Hey, you know how we're always begging people to review us, and then we say they'll read it out loud? We have a review to read. This is a debut. This is from... Daniel Hudspeth. Hi, Daniel.
Hi, Daniel.
Daniel, you're my number one pal. Daniel's, it's a quick review, but it's the right review. But as promised, I think we have to decide how we're going to present it.
Oh, that's right. Because we've threatened
voices, accents. Do you know what?
We do it through interpretive dance? This is a podcast, after all.
Oh my gosh, that would be so downtown of us. To just do an interpretive dance.
It would be like 15... the video I saw that just went viral from a girl doing Helen Keller the musical, and she just sits on stage.
Yes, I saw that. I was like, what's going on? It's brilliant. We would just be on the podcast. It would just be 15 seconds of silence and a couple like... Bang! Meow! Boing!
Sounds of a scarf.
I think I'm going to throw this to you to read Daniel Hudspeth's Facebook review, and since you're already in the zone, just give it to us as Carol Channing.
Oh, yes, I would just love to. Okay, here we are. Daniel Hudspeth said, on Facebook, no less. I just started your podcast, and I have to say, I absolutely love it. I do. I love it.
With an exclamation point, which means...
punctuation, no less.
Yeah. Everything Carol Channing says is with lots
and
of punctuation.
At the bottom. That's what an exclamation point is.
It's really all it's ever been.
It makes me go, ha ha.
Exclamation points today, exclamation points yesterday.
But never today. No. It's your line and then you plop it down. And that's what I do.
Daniel, thank you for listening. Tell all your friends. If you want us to read your review, well, let's be honest, you just have to write one.
Yes.
Beyond that, we're also chomping at the bit. We really want to invite you to our theater countdown parties online, where we're just going to get together for a while and talk about all of your favorite listicles, and just talk about theater with you. Give you our bonus episodes, of which we have many hot, fresh, ready to go. And, of course, all the good feeling that you could possibly have knowing that you're supporting us in our lifelong dream. You're helping us live. This is the single greatest dream either of us have ever had.
And, I mean, who hasn't dreamed a dream?
Yeah.
So
it's time gone by. Yeah. Sometimes it feels like an impossible dream. But dream a little dream.
Oh, there! Thank you. My brain just stopped. I was like, what's another dream song? What's another dream song?
I think I said dream a little dream, but I meant to say baby, dream your dream.
Baby, dream your dream. And a Helen Gallagher tune.
She's back. She's back, Helen Gallagher.
When is she not here?
She's always present. That being said, let's... We're going to say the same thing.
Are we?
Yes.
I think we are. It's going to be that time that every time we get the same number four.
Yeah, we do. Our fours are in alignment.
Thank God.
But we've been sharing so much of our game time with our very special guests. And quite frankly, we want more us.
I agree.
Right. Which is what we've been told you want.
Yes. More us. Because there's not enough as it is.
So we're going to do a game.
We are.
Just you and me, kid.
That's, I can't wait. Show me how it's done.
You put your right foot in, you put your right foot out, you put your right foot in, and you shake it all about.
Oh, that's how you do it.
Yeah.
That sounds like a third arabesque.
Third arabesque?
Yeah.
Ouch. Ouch. That's not a thing. All right. Chris, Game Lord Chris. Oh, I've upgraded him to Lord, apparently. He's our Game Lord. He's like a Sith.
Wow.
Hi, Sith.
Better than being a Sist.
What's up, Sith?
Hey.
There was an earthquake. Can
we talk
about it?
There was an earthquake.
Yeah. By the time this is reaching your ears, like light coming from the sun, it's been a while. But today was the earthquake in New York City. And I'm happy to report... that neither of us felt a damn thing.
Neither of us. And I'm so bummed I missed it, honestly.
Yeah. I think I must have been on a fully cruising subway train. And then I went to the barbershop and everybody's phones went off like crazy. And it was like a scene from In the Heights. And it was very exciting. But
the barber did a great job, though. You look very dashing.
Do you know what I'm enjoying? I'm enjoying this... What's this little swoop right here?
Got a little curl that no one listening
can
see, but
nobody else can
I'll describe it through interpretive dance.
Did I ever tell you this? I guess I have to tell you this at some point, and I guess now is the time.
Yeah,
I have not told you any of you this. On my last cruise, did I tell you this story? So I'm it's not that kind of story. Everyone's face.
I was gonna say, I was like,
if you know what, my life.
How does this circle back to antibiotics?
It always does. The circle of antibiotics. In my life, when I'm not dazzling you on a podcast, I am the cruise director for this huge company that does all gay cruises, right? Which means I wear a lot of silly costumes and blah, blah, blah. I'm kind of the MC of the whole event. And I had a guy, so I'm meeting a lot of people. I'm meeting literally thousands of people. And I stand there and I give people hugs as they get onto the ship and we make fun jokes and just, you know, the icebreaker and making sure they feel welcome. And there was a guy who came in, and I gave him a hug, and he walked away, but then he stopped, And then he and his partner just kept whispering to each other and staring back at me. And I was like, well, I mean, I am sort of famous. And also, I'm the cruise director, so everyone's looking at me at some point, right?
Or else they won't know what's going on. That is the joke. Isn't there, like, a dad joke about that?
Yeah. So then he comes up to me, and he says, I'm sorry, finally. And I was like, come on, come get an autograph, baby. He comes up to me, and he says, did I just see you on some video? And I was like, where to begin? You got to narrow that one down, kiddo. And he's like, I just feel like I was just watching you. Were you talking about flops? And I went, oh, yes, I was talking about flops. So he has been watching the show but on YouTube, which if you're listening, you maybe didn't realize was an option. But he recognized me from watching us talk about our first episode, talking about flops.
Whoa.
And I embraced him even more firmly than he wanted probably. And I was like, you have absolutely made my day. So,
wow.
There you go. That happened on a gay cruise.
Go. Oh, my God.
And that's about the only story I can say on air about a gay cruise. But
okay.
That one is very nice.
Well, thank goodness for the gay
cruises. All right. Now, Thith, yes. What's our game?
What's our game, girl?
We're going to be playing Theater Filibuster one more time. We played it earlier in the season. We're going to give it another shot now. I'll give you a theater-related thing and see how long, or see if you can talk about it for 30 seconds without faltering. We'll go back and forth a few rounds to see if you've got what it takes.
Don't you
this
worry.
Is this is the right game for us to play in private.
Yes.
Or publicly. Many people to hear.
Okay, so I want to go with Ben first. You're the first on my screen. Ben, I'm going to have you for the next 30 seconds talk about Betty Buckley. Starting now.
Oh my gosh. Betty Buckley has been revered since the 70s as one of Broadway's greatest voices. She's most known for playing Grizabella in Andrew Lloyd Webber's smash long-running sensation, Cats. It was the last song added. It's the only original, like, song lyrically that was put into the show. And there's a whole backstory of how she found the moment and found the big high note. But don't sleep on Betty Buckley in The Mystery of Edwin Drood and hear her sing The Writing on the Wall. Betty Buckley also starred in the greatest flop of all time, Carrie. And Betty Buckley remains to this day an icon.
Very good.
And she travels everywhere with a bird.
What?
Yeah, apparently. Anyway,
also, Betty Buckley will always respond to what you say about her on social media.
For real? I'm going to DM 100%, her right now.
No. She will respond. If you write, oh my gosh, we couldn't stop talking about at Betty Buckley on the show today, Betty Buckley will respond. She will like it or say I'm honored or something.
Oh,
true
that's
story.
Fun.
Yeah.
Has she ever won a Tony Award?
Betty Buckley?
Did she win for Cats?
You bet she did.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Absolutely.
Woof, I scared myself for a second there.
Well, now I'm scared too. Hold on. Now I'm doubting myself.
And now all I can think of is her doing Hello Dolly Duck Walk, but calling it the Buck Walk.
Ayo. Yeah, 1983. Best. Yeah, she won the Tony.
For Cats.
For Cats.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Gits.
Okay.
Or as all my French tourists at TKTS would say, gits. You have gits.
Gits. Gits.
Michael,
do you want
to turn.
Skit?
Yes.
I'm going to have you for the next 30 seconds or so talk to me. We'll stay in the realm of people for now. I'm going to have you talk about Jay Groban himself, Josh Groban, starting now.
Josh Groban. Oh, Josh Groban to me is like the personification of a hug. Like, when he sings, it literally just feels like a soft, soothing hug. Not one where it's like a time of crisis, but one where you're just like, see each other in the street. You're like, oh, yeah, you just go in for just like a hug. That to me is Josh Groban. I was such a fan of his when I was young. And then all my opera friends used to say bad things about him, but I stood by him and I proud I did.
You know nothing about Josh Groban.
Awesome,
you
no,
took 20
I do. I
seconds
love Josh Groban.
To say, you took 10 seconds to say his name and aw twice.
Okay.
And then just talked about how he's a hug.
but that goes to show how much I love him. I don't even need to try and like wow you with factoids about his various Christmas albums and Celine Dion duets. Or I supersede that. I am literally to the point where my love of him is purely vowels.
But you do know that we're on a theater show, so maybe you could have mentioned any of those Broadway shows he starred on.
Just was in a show. Sorry.
I like it. I want to use your technique.
That
the next
was
time
my.
I
reclaim my time. You can talk about whatever you want during your filibuster moment. And I adore Josh Groban. I guess I could have used that time to talk about when I saw him in Great Comet. He was doing that.
Oh no. I'm going to use your technique the next time I get a person. Okay. I'm so into that.
Sorry, I think I did the game wrong.
No. No. That was right. That was absolutely right.
The point of the game is just to keep going.
I just got so excited. I love him. I broke Ben. My love of Josh Groban just literally broke you. Okay. Because I do love him. Okay.
All right.
Okay, Ben.
Hit me with the filibuster stick.
I'm going to give you a production.
All right, please do.
Because you don't want him. Okay.
I'm going to give you a production. I'm going to have you for the next 30 seconds talk to me about Kimberly Akimbo.
Kimberly Akimbo is a slice of life musical from one of the greatest writers of the modern musical theater era, Janine Tesori, based on the play. It's about a young woman living with a disease where she ages much faster than she is. So although she is a teenager, chronologically, her body is much, much older, and how she navigates her world in high school with her deranged aunt and her crazy, busted parents. The score is delightful. It makes you cry at the end. It's got an incredible ensemble cast of kids. Actually, they're all probably in their 20s, but they look like kids, and you've got to go see it because it's closing any minute now.
Not her crazy busted parents.
Right? They are
literally broken. She has two broken wrists.
Yeah, she is busted.
She is.
Yeah, her dad's an alcoholic loser, and she's got this horrible disease, and she's going to sing like a bird. Also, it won Vicky Clark another Tony.
A well-deserved Tony Award.
So let's do one more for Michael.
I'm going to do it right this time.
I'm
going to
give you the choice of a production or a venue.
Oh, no, just give him another person. Please give him another person.
No, because now I know how to do it right. No, do it. Give me a production, because since we just did. Yeah. Wait, a venue. Would it be like a specific theater?
It would be.
Oh, wow.
Oh, gosh, I'd have to try and remember what I saw. That's a challenge.
Okay.
If I don't know it, I'm just going to talk about carpeting.
That's okay. I'm going to disregard what you said. I want you, for the next 30 seconds, please talk about Jason Robert Brown.
Oh, another person. Okay, Jason Robert Brown is an acclaimed composer who I think probably really liked Stephen Sondheim at a point in his life. So he wrote Parade, which is one of my favorite scores. He also wrote The Last 5 Years, which has no duets that made it on our list. But the whole show is a big duet, which starred Norbert Leo Butz and Sherry Renee Scott, two people with three names. Two people, six names, one show.
It's 5 years. Two people, six names, 5 years. Ta-da. Uh-huh.
I think that's why Jason Robert Brown wanted them. He felt seen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because when they all walked in a room, there's three people, nine names, 5 years, two roles, and a partridge in an off-Broadway pear tree.
And zero duets.
And zero duets. Not a single duet to be seen. Or her.
Oh, I think Chris, who won? Everybody.
I think everybody wins.
Josh Groban won.
I think Josh Groban's the clear winner.
That's the
Now if I ever meet him, I want him to just walk up and hug me. And just that's how we'll know he listens to this.
Oh my gosh. That's how we'll know. That'll be the clue. We've suspected it for so long. We know he listens.
Oh God.
That's how you know he counts.
Chris, thank you so much. 'Twas such a fun game, even if I didn't. You deserve a Josh Groban hug for putting up with our shenanigans during that.
Christus, Lord of Games.
You just sounded like Maggie Smith trying to talk while also consuming a Werther's.
Which, if I could imagine Maggie Smith at any given moment in her human existing life, I imagine that she's enjoying a Werther's.
I hope so.
At all times.
We were just talking, I was with some friends talking about what grandma candies, like what your gran kept in her bag.
Yeah.
Like mine, it was one grandma always had Werther's, one had Mentos.
Oh, really? And what about nobody was rocking a butter rum lifesaver?
No. Is that what yours had?
There were some butter rum lifesavers. And sometimes, or like straight up butterscotch discs. And sometimes you'll crave that.
Yeah.
Ugh. Maybe it's just the warmth. Maybe it's maybe it's just the grandma of it all.
Just granny candy.
Yeah.
Love it.
Please unwrap your granny candy before the curtain goes up. When you go to the theater. I think that's hilarious that has become part of the pre-curtain speech everywhere. It's like, turn off your cell phones, but most importantly, unwrap all of your candies now!
For the love. And then don't unwrap your second one during... Anyway, we could go down our top 10 craziest things we've seen audience members do.
What I like to imagine, though, is that somebody really takes that and is like, well, I've got about 17 individually wrapped butterscotch discs. I best get to unwrapping now and place them out. Uh-huh. Now that they're unwrapped, where do you put them? That's the real question.
That's
in the bottom of your bag. Who God only knows what's in there. Mm-hmm. So I want to imagine that you line them up on your lap.
Yes, you do. It's like somebody they're like, can I get by? No, you can't.
I've got my candies for both acts lined up.
I have lots
unwrapped.
Of them here. Yeah. I have to get to the theater 15 minutes early to unwrap my candies. But I prefer an aisle seat, so everyone climb over me without disturbing my candies. That's the real challenge this evening.
Are we still talking about candy?
Welcome
to Olympiki. So today it's a departure in countdown themes for us a little bit. We like to subscribe to a musical theme because we like to hear the music, and I love that very much. But today, much like you did earlier in the game, we're really going to talk about the people.
Yes.
Because we want to count down our top 10 theater performers of any age, living or dead, that we would like to sit down and have lunch with. Mm-hmm. And one more thing I'm going to add to this. I want us to not only say who we would like to sit down with and spend the time, but also what we would like to eat with them.
Ooh, that's
and
fun.
You might not be prepared for that. Well, here's the good news. Neither am I.
Okay, great.
So this we're gonna swirl these.
Okay.
We're gonna fresh direct these menus up a little bit.
Fab. Okay. Who's going? I'm kind of excited about my first one.
Are you?
Yeah. Okay. So
So am I.
Yeah. So the thing, this whole counting down, I thought counting down who we'd have lunch with was going to be one of the easier ones. Cause I was like, oh, this is no pressure. This is personal preference completely. Like there's none of this, like, I don't know. Like, I don't love that show, but I have to admit, it's one of the greats. So this is, which actually made it harder. Cause every time I put a list together, I'd look at it and just like feel guilty that somebody wasn't there, you know, spoilers, Gwen Verdon is not on my list, and I love Gwen Verdon, and it broke my heart to take her off the list, and I felt like I was betraying her in some way. Because I love her.
Yeah.
But she'd probably be number 11. But my first person, my number 10, that I would like to have lunch with is, and we all know this person, she is an icon, Mary Wicks.
We all know this person.
I was waiting for you to have been. No one knows.
Good
the
old
name Mary
Wicks.
Wicks.
Not a clue.
But I guarantee you know who this is. So in Sister Act, she's the older curmudgeon-y nun.
Okay.
Who like doesn't believe they can do it. I guarantee if you Google Mary Wicks, you have seen her. She's one of those ladies who started, she had a 60-year career. I think it helped that she looked 60 the entire time.
100%.
So she was one of those, when she was born, sort of like Bea Arthur, you know, she was born at the age of, you know, 65 and just sort of stayed there. She first started in something called The Farmer Takes a Wife in 1934 with Henry Fonda. And she worked in films. She's because she's one of the people who worked in films. She did many Broadway shows. Her first Broadway show, it was, yeah, Farmer Takes the Wife in 1934. She was an understudy. Her last Broadway performance, and there's loads of Broadway shows here. Her last one was a revival of Oklahoma in 1979. She played Aunt Eller. But she was in, she was that character lady in everything. And just sort of flew under the radar. And I think she's like one of the ultimate flyer under the radar actresses who just didn't stop working for 60 years. And I can only imagine the stories that she would have from just being on stage or being on set, but always sort of being that sort of person in the background with like Orson Welles, Betty Davis, like I said, Henry Fonda, like on stage, on screen, everywhere. And just sort of what those stories must be like of a career that spanned that long and to see the changes from like starting in the mid 1930s and working up until like you're in sister act opposite Whoopi Goldberg, you know.
It's really, I'm looking her up and it's really striking to look at her, like her shots when she was young, her like glamour shots when she was a tiny young lady.
Mm-hmm. But you know who I'm talking about, right?
Of course
you see her face, you're like, oh, her. She's 100%. To me, she's the ultimate, oh, her actress, you know.
Mama Hatu, Mama Hatu, Santu Santu, Domini.
Yeah, she's that one.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's a very cool. I feel like that gives you street cred. That's a good one.
Thank you. I've always been a big Mary Wicks fan. I love a wisecracking broad, like Eve Arden is one of my favorites. And I feel like Mary Wicks is like right there with her.
Weirdly though, as I looked her up just now as we're reading, there's some very fun things. Like it tells us how much she made for Sister Act in 1992. In Sister Act, after this huge, long, illustrious career, she made $150,000 making that movie. She was neighbors and good friends with Lucille Ball. Mm-hmm. And she died in October of 1995 of renal failure, massive gastrointestinal bleeding, severe hypotension. I shouldn't be laughing about this.
She deserves better than that.
Ischemic cardiomyopathy, anemia, and breast cancer.
Oh my God.
All at the same time?
Sweet Jesus.
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought her up on the list. She needs a little love. That sounds...
Poor Mary Wicks.
What a day.
I'm going through her Broadway credits. Again, as I said, of which there are many. Like, Hitch Your Wagon. But I also forgot she was in The Man Who Came to Dinner on Broadway and then did the film, which is a great play. Never mind.
What will happen what will happen now, though, is I will now start, now that you've put her on my radar, I will start to see her everywhere. Like, I'll start to see her, like, on TV or in movies. I'll be like, oh, my God, she's everywhere. Because if you looking at her wiki page and IMDb, she is so accomplished.
Yeah, literally did not stop working for 60 years. So
that's a good life.
That's Mary Wicks. What a gal. She's my first lunch date.
What are you eating?
She's so tall.
What are you eating with her?
Oh, that's right. What are we eating? But I feel like we're having like a Niçoise salad because she feels like one of those ladies who I don't know this, but she played those sort of like wisecracking like maids and stuff like that. But I feel like in real life, she was very fancy, like wore mink stoles. And we went for Niçoise salads at like some cafe on the Upper East Side.
Absolutely. You know? No, it was definitely a Niçoise salad.
Yes.
With Mary Wicks.
Mary Wicks.
I love it.
Justice Forget about Tuesdays Wicks. With Maury. Talk about Niçoise salads with Mary Wicks.
Niçoise with Mary. Lunch with Wicks.
Can you imagine? No, we're going to go make candles together. Go do one of those like drink and make candle things. It's going to be Wicks and Wicks.
Oh, wow.
I'll see myself out.
Now, I didn't know we were dating them.
Oh, I would date Mary Wicks in a heartbeat.
Fun Tinder dates.
Yeah, I'm 5'8", she's 5'11". It would be perfect.
Listen, you could stand on her shoes while you do a slow dance while they're playing some Gershwin, some Tommy Dorsey.
Exactly.
My number 10, well, you're going to kind of kill me, though, given the kerfuffle that's probably been edited out of this. But hear me out for number 10.
If this is a composer.
For number 10, because this is a theater actor who is much more well known for being a theater writer that I would like to have lunch with, but acted in many of their own works. So the first person I want to have lunch with at number 10 is William Shakespeare.
Oh, okay.
I want to have lunch. I want to go to lunch with Willie B. Shakespeare's. And I want to know. We don't know enough. Like, we are fed the brilliant and is the greatest, has the greatest command of the English language of any writer who's ever written.
Mm-hmm.
And as I mentioned, performed in a lot of his own works. But there's also so much kind of, I got this word from Carly Heitner. There's a lot of lore kind of around Shakespeare and mm-hmm. what did he plagiarize and what works were not necessarily his. Mm-hmm. And
what glove what is the best glove for the shape of your hand?
This is a question. Yeah. If I tickle him, does he not laugh? I can only find out at lunch.
That's true. If he's even real, you know, like, see if anybody even sits down.
Right.
Because if you end up getting ghosted, then we know that it was just a combination of people.
That it was Christopher Marlowe.
Yeah.
Or Christopher, right?
Yeah.
I want to know the truth behind all of that scandal.
Ooh.
And was he the greatest literary thief of all time? Mm-hmm. Is he the most genius? And want to know the inspirations and what he thought mm-hmm. of his work centuries later, where we revere him as the greatest gift to the theater and the kind of the blueprint for good theater.
Yeah.
For the rest of time. Uh-huh. And we would have, we would obviously have some sort of like sausage on a metal, on like a, you know,
like, yeah, a, like a Bangers and Mash kind of situation.
That's what we would have. It would be like an oldie timesy banger as a mash and maybe some ale, mm-hmm. Even though I don't drink, but he would want ale, I think.
Yeah, and you wouldn't want to drink the water during that Elizabethan time anyway, so you would want the ale.
Honestly, you know. I would prefer, if since we get to do magic in this, I would much rather he come visit me in my world than I visit him in his.
And just then you can show him Shakespeare in Love and be like, what do you think? Was Judi Dench like the real thing?
And watch him barf on his buckled shoes.
Exactly. Because you took him to McDonald's and his body can't process things like that.
Oh, I feel so clever. Shakespeare, number 10.
Oh, that's good. I love that. What a classy beginning. Look at us go. Look at our street cred. You pick Shakespeare. I pick Mary Wicks. We're off to a great start.
I can't wait till we get to number 4.
I know. It's going to be the same
one,
I guarantee.
The same person.
So I'm about to ruin that, though. I'm going to go with someone enormously cliche right now.
All right.
And again, because I'm me, I go for old-timey people. This is Ethel Merman.
Yeah,
I would be so curious. Like, speaking of bangers and mash, like, talk about the personification of a sausage, and that is Ethel Merman. You know, she's I've said it before. I'll say it again: a bratwurst with a wig and a really big voice. But again, another person who had a truly epic career. Because my thing at these lunches, I want stories. Because I just want to sit and have you just regale me with your life, and I feel like Ethel would be more than happy to do that. And she worked with everybody and was there sort of at the birth of modern American musical theater.
Yeah.
And was friends with all of them, was working with all of them. I want to hear the tea on like the Gypsy movie and why she didn't get it and how she felt about it. Because she angrily, like when that movie came out, she did a national tour of the show just to like throw off the movie.
Yeah.
So I love, she feels like that lady was going to really give it to you because she does have that sort of like mildly vindictive side to her.
Yeah.
And also like how colorful, like when Sondheim has that great story about Ethel Merman when she was on, was it Dinah Shore? She was on somebody's show who wouldn't allow swearing. And Ethel like swore like a trucker.
Yeah.
And it was like every time she swore, they had a little jar. And I want to say it was Dinah Shore. Somebody like that. Somewhere real, a Clutch of Pearls kind of gal.
Yeah.
And Ethel was singing on it. And Stephen Sondheim tells a story where she's like, oh, God damn it. And she's like, Ethel, that's a quarter in the swear jar. And then, you know, 2 seconds later, Ethel swears again. And she's like, Ethel, another quarter in the swear jar. After the third one, Ethel just walks over and she's like, you know what? Here's a dollar and go yourself. Like, You know, and she just feels like, I just feel like her stories would be great. And the whole time she'd be, you know, the eyes would be popping off to the sides.
Sure,
and yeah. She probably would burst into song at some point.
She could not help herself.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, where's the water? Like, if there's no waiter around, she'd be like, wait, you know, like,
yeah.
It'd be great.
And no matter what room the waiter was in, he'd hear her.
Exactly. Every waiter from all the restaurants around town.
Yeah, absolutely. You'd be a Tavern on the Green, but they'd hear you at, that's the only restaurant I know in New York.
And I'd be so curious because everyone compares Patti LuPone to her now. Like, Patti's sort of the Ethel Merman of her time. And, like, play her some Patti and be like, so what do you think?
Oh. And what are you eating?
Oh, what are we eating? I feel like we went out. She feels like a real, like, steak kind of gal. I don't know why I have to, like, bob my head when I think of her. I feel like we're getting, like, steaks and potatoes. You know, she's a meat and potatoes kind of gal.
She is the meat and potatoes of the theater.
Like, in a nice restaurant, but she's still getting, like, a steak and a baked potato.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Also, she was kind of the muse of, for the art form in its early years, period.
That's why I think
there was no bigger star.
Like, they were writing for her when they were writing those original musicals.
Oh, yeah.
You know, she was it. She was the mama.
Yeah. That's brilliant. That's absolutely brilliant.
And she worked with Marilyn Monroe and Donald O'Connor. Like, she worked with some cool people.
And they called her the Merm.
The Merminator.
Oh my
God. Like, I mean, my God. Forget and have you ever seen It's a Mad, 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 Mad World?
I believe I have.
Such a fun movie.
It's hilarious.
With Blake Edwards. And she worked with Blake Edwards, who's one of my favorite film directors. And so I'd be like, what was that like? You know?
Because you love a Victor Victoria.
I love a Victor Victoria and a Pink
that's
Panther.
Right. Yeah. Boom.
Boom. All right. That is my number nine.
My
the most cliche Broadway gal of all time, but I got to meet her.
All right, my number nine, I want to sit down with illustrious theater actor and major movie star James Earl Jones.
Ooh.
Is my number nine. I want to sit down with James Earl Jones So yes, you know James Earl Jones as the voice of Darth Vader. That is
he breathes.
He breathes.
Very famously breathes. Yeah.
And he's got that big, rich voice. And we know him in his older years as being this kind of very big fellow. But when he was young, he was not.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at some of the Broadway shows that he starred in, of Mice and Men. He in the 80s, he starred as Othello on Broadway. Starred in The Iceman Cometh. Fences, On Golden Pond, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, Driving Miss Daisy.
Wow.
Driving Miss
That's
Daisy.
Right. He was
James Earl Jones before Morgan Freeman did it in the film. That is the very, very tip of the iceberg. If you look up James Earl Jones theater credits, it's like one of those wonderful scrolls that just goes on and on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
And I think that he was such a pioneer in kind of the same breath as like Sidney Poitier of the black theater experience in on a major way. And he's kind of just the godfather of legitimate stage acting that also got to be a big Hollywood star. But he was on Broadway as recently as 2014 or 2015.
I saw him.
In You Can't Take It With You.
Yeah, he was great.
And he's great and hilarious. And
his
presence is bigger than whatever restaurant we're enjoying lunch in.
True.
I just feel like
to sit outside.
The stories, thank God you can now with all the booths in New York City. You can you can dine out anywhere. Just look out for the Electra scooters.
I'm a menace to society. But I want my takeout.
But I do. How else am I going to Uber Eat?
Did anyone order German? All right.
Uber. James Earl Jones, number nine. Get into
Love it. Great. Okay, so that means I'm to number eight. I'm going with another great sort of like classic actor who isn't dead, which that's a real change for me. It's Ian McKellen. So I went with a young one, a young filly that is Ian McKellen.
Oh, I love this choice, but the way you just looked at me like it won't be long now. his days are numbered.
I mean, he ain't dead, but I mean, he could buy some green bananas, but
what
not invest in
more
real estate.
Do we want from him? You're free to go. You've done it all, yeah. Gandalf.
And that's why I love Ian McKellen. And I was lucky enough to meet him once, and he was hysterical. And
really?
Because a friend of mine worked on the X-Men movies. And when Ian and Patrick Stewart were doing the two-handers, when they were doing Waiting for Godot and then No Man's Land, back and forth, my friend took me to see it, and luckily he was like, "Oh, I want to go backstage and say hello to both of them because from the X-Men films," and they were both hysterical. You know, they were like two little kids after a show, and we had just seen Godot, and Patrick Stewart was going, "Oh my God, you know, I forgot the lines at one point," and Ian, thank God, you know, improvised, and how many people can improvise Godot? You know, he got us right, but I was gonna pee my pants on shit. You know, he was like, I was freaking out, and Ian is just cracking up, and he's like, "You're a mess," you know, like. And he's like, it's difficult. You know, I just made some things up and got us back on track. You know, like, and he just seems like he was so sweet for someone who's so, you know, has, I think, one of the greatest actors, you know, of his generation. And his stories, again, like, just because he's done everything from the RSC to the National Theater, doing, you know, one of the original great Shakespeare actors who's part of that group with, you know, Judi Dench, Maggie Smith, yeah. Patrick Stewart, you know, the original group with the RSC and the Old Vic. To his movie career and like Lord of the Rings and X-Men and also he just seems so wonderfully gung-ho. Like, he's popped up in music videos, and he just did like a whole tour doing a British panto show where he was in drag. He is one of my, you know,
he's a gay icon.
Yeah, truly. And also, like, who is openly gay at a time when nobody else could be, and he also seems like one of those people who doesn't care. He's like, he's just gonna be true to himself, and you know, to talk about that, like, what was it like to be an out gay actor, you know, like, I don't think he was screaming it from the rooftops, though if he was, it was probably pretty eloquent, but but he didn't seem like someone who ever denied it either. And is still working, and clearly is still playing, you know, and just, that seems to be sort of the core of his career, is he does things that he just sort of has fun with. I just love Ian McKellen so much. So I would just love to sit down with him. And he just seems like a hoot and a half.
I love all those pictures of him in that recent panto. It was like Mrs. somebody or other.
Yeah.
Like, dressed as an old granny and living his life on stage. But you're talking about Gandalf and Magneto and...
But
he's
the greatest
Shakespearean god,
Richard III, and Macbeth, basically, of all time.
Yeah.
Like, he like wrote the book on how to play Shakespearean villains.
That's, you know, just,
so.
Yeah.
Oh, and one of my favorite sitcoms. Have you seen Vicious?
No.
It's Vicious? It only had, I want to say, two seasons. You can watch it on PBS. But it's all these great actors that got together. So it's Ian McKellen and Derek Jacobi. Who is another one of those older British guys, if you see him, you're like, oh, him. But when he was younger with Ian, he was like the romantic lead. When Ian was playing Richard III in Macbeth, Derek Jacobi was like the Romeo. And like, he played the leading man. And he's also gay. So they were the two, you know, guys. And so the show is them, and they're a couple that's been together for way too long. And they only sort of communicate with barbs. And all they do is just make fun of each other. And like... Frances Delatour, another one who you'd recognize is on it.
Yeah.
She was in Harry Potter. She was the tall French one.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But
Madame
another,
Maxime.
Yes. But another one of like great British actresses. And one of the guys from Game of Thrones is on it. But very funny show. Highly recommend. Absolutely hysterical.
What's it called? The Vicious?
Vicious. Just Vicious.
Not the vicious.
And like it's so. And Ian McKellen plays an actor who like never quite made it, and all he does is name drop. He's like, oh, I'm going to see Judi Dench, and he's like, oh, come off it, you never met Judi Dench, like.
But I bet he has.
And that's the joke. It's like, but he in real life knows her very well.
Yeah.
All right.
Brilliant. That's an inspired choice. Well done.
Thank you.
Where am I? I'm number eight. Number eight. My number eight is, I don't know. I'll leave you to decide if you think this is basic bitchery or not.
Well,
but
I did Ethel Merman, so.
She is the widely regarded as the greatest actress of all time. And she, at her core, and forever and always will be a theater actress. And not just in straight plays, etc., but in musicals as well. I'm lunching with Meryl Streep. Meryl Streep. We're going back. We're going to talk about playing at the Public and doing Taming of the Shrew with Raul Julia when she was a tiny baby. Mm-hmm.
Mother Courage, she pops up at the Public periodically.
Yeah. Mother Courage, which where she sang and carried this 3-hour epic show and has starred on Broadway in all the Chekhov plays and all of the like really hard hitting dramas that are probably just way over my head, frankly. And she eats them for dinner. But beyond that, she just seems to have such a cool head on her shoulders because she's also the greatest female star in Hollywood, right? Mm-hmm. Mother of all stars. But I love that she's still carrying the candle for what she loves and, you know, the fact that she's doing the Mamma Mias and that she wanted to do Mamma Mia and she wants to do Into the Woods and she wants to do all these musicals that she can get her hands on because
she wanted to do that originally.
Yeah.
And she couldn't get booked. Like, she wanted to do musical theater. I know someone who went to grad school with her and was like, they used to make fun of her. She, like, all she went to do was Broadway musicals. And they all were like, girl, you're not a good enough singer. Like, you should stick to just acting. And I feel like now she's like, look at me now.
Yeah, but I think there's so. I want to talk to her about what's the inspiration of trying, you know, continuing to hold that candle and living that dream for herself is as a musical theater person primarily. I just think she would be so gracious, so giving, so telling. Yeah. I think she would pick up the check.
I think she would. She seems lovely, honestly.
Maybe we're just going to have crepes. Maybe it's like a brunch situation and we're having
that
some crepes.
Right. Something
crepes
light.
With Streep. Or maybe we'll have a New York Streep steak. But I just think lunch with Meryl Streep is the way to go.
I love
Meryl
that.
Streep, number eight.
Meryl uh-huh. Streep, love it. Okay. That just makes me think of Katharine Hepburn. When you said the greatest actress of all time, I was like, oh, you're going to say Katharine Hepburn. Only because she has 4 Academy Awards. And she was one where when people were saying Meryl Streep is the new Katharine Hepburn, as far as like the great actress, and Katharine Hepburn was alive for when people were saying that, and she did not like it.
No, I bet she didn't.
It was like an interview where they were like, Meryl Streep is like the new you. And she was like, you can see all the wheels turning. Like, she did not have nice things to say about Meryl. Which is, I think, part of her. She was like, I don't like that there's somebody sort of coming for my spot.
The greatest actress ever live. Wow.
Yeah, she was like, no, it's me.
All right.
Okay, my number 7. It's not Katharine Hepburn, although it could be. She did do Broadway shows. Gregory Hines.
Oh, beautiful.
I love Gregory Hines. And in doing this, I realize I don't actually even know that much about Gregory Hines.
That's why you gotta go to lunch.
He did Sophisticated Ladies. He did Jelly's Last Jam. He won his Tony for Jelly's Last Jam. He did a bunch of Broadway shows, a lot of films. You know, he was in one of my favorite Mel Brooks movies, History of the World, Part 1. And obviously Will and Grace, he was great on.
White Knight with Mikhail Baryshnikov.
But I just... he's a YouTube rabbit hole that I just love. Just watching him dance and even hearing him speak and just watching him move. He's just, to me, the epitome of cool. Like, I think Gregory Hines is one of the just like coolest, most like elegant people I think ever to live. I see him and I'm calmed, if that makes sense.
Oh, interesting.
I just love him so much. And so I think that would just be one of those lunches that I would want to go on forever, you know, and just to be in his presence and have him, if he liked me, I'd be like, well, now I can walk anywhere now because Gregory Hines thinks I'm cool, you know?
I think he would like you.
I hope so. Watch, he's like, can't. And just leaves 2 seconds in. He's like,
this has been nice.
You seem like a lot. You're going to compare me to food at some point. I don't like that. Anyway,
your name
I just
is
love Gregory
Duncan,
Hines.
Right?
Yeah. What was it again? Barefoot.
Duncan Hines.
And let's see. And what are we eating?
Brownies.
Brownies.
Duncan Hines brownies. I don't know.
Okay. I think we're walking. I think we're moving. I think we went and just got like smoothies somewhere and we're walking around the village and he's wearing a really cool coat. Okay. And like as we're walking periodically, he does like a little step, you know?
Ooh, a ball like, change.
Like a little bit of grit on the sidewalk and he turns into like a shh moment. Cause he can make everything just a moment.
Yeah.
So I like that. He probably came from working out. So we got protein smoothies and we're wandering around the village. And he has a beautiful, you know, long coat on.
Is it a fur coat?
No, it's an overcoat, but it's a good one.
Okay.
Yeah.
something that catches air, catches
yeah, exactly.
When
exactly.
he does a little spin.
With high waisted sort of acid like 80s jeans and the
shirt. Oh, okay.
Shirt.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I know more about what he's wearing than what he's eating.
Well, and let's be honest, sometimes what we eat can be based on what we're wearing. Cause
exactly. Or if you're me, after you eat, you are wearing it.
Wearing it. So. 100%. I'm covered in chicken nugget dust. My number seven is just an obsession of mine on so many levels and was a Broadway star. Pretty early on in her career, but we know her for being the original Yenta, the matchmaker in Fiddler on the Roof, and starring as Vera Charles in Mame. I'm having lunch with the great Bea Arthur. What a lunch that'll be. We're not going to wear shoes. She's going to tell me everything. She's going to bitch and moan about all of it. She's going to tell me all the dish. She's going to tell me why she hated Betty White so much.
Did she actually hate Betty White?
Oh, and I can tell you that's the truth because I heard the story from Rue McClanahan.
Wait, you know Rue McClanahan?
Yes, Rue McClanahan, Blanche Devereaux from the Golden Girls, was in Wicked. She was Madame Morrible in Wicked for a while.
She was.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and I got Rue McClanahan and George Hearn at the same time. I thought my head was going to pop off my body.
I'm surprised
and
I didn't.
Got on great with both of them, which like fills my heart with so much joy to this day.
Uh-huh.
But she would tell these stories about Bea calling Betty the C word and that they just hated each other.
Oh, it was mutual.
On the Golden Girls. I think Bea hated Betty more than Betty hated Bea. But you know, and then I saw her Broadway one woman show, Just Between Friends, which was, let's be honest, totally watered down, but it was Bea Arthur and like everything she does is gold as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
I mean, she was just so undeniably a star that they swept her up and just built things around her from guesting to All in the Family to the creation of Maude, which was on for ages and then led into the Golden Girls. And then she left on her terms, and I want to talk to her about that. I want to talk to her.
Yeah, she didn't come back, right, for
the Golden
Girls sequel?
Palette.
Yeah.
No, that's the whole reason the series ended, is because she said, I've done it. That's all there is to do. She was like a huge gay rights activist her entire life. And she loved singing. She brought music into everything that she did. She was a true original, and I have a framed 8x10 of her somewhere in my room. That's Bea Arthur for me. What was that? Number seven, yeah.
Bea Arthur, another fun YouTube rabbit hole. Because she worked, again, also somebody worked forever. Like, guest starred on the Red Skelton show when she was young.
Also in History of the World.
Also in History of the World. Or like her story being in the original Three Penny Opera.
Yes. Did a crazy musical number in the Star Wars musical special that was on TV in like the 70s, 80s. There's a whole number that she does in the canteen.
Talk about somebody who did some of the weirdest 80s, 90s musical specials for TV you've ever seen. Like the ones where she like does the Urkel, she danced with the Jackson 5. Like whenever we have a weird idea for a TV special, Bea Arthur was like, I am there.
I'm game. Yeah.
Yeah. What a gal. Oh,
what
my God, B. Arthur.
Gal. Okay. I want to know all of it.
Yes. Oh, and probably will be very candid. Cause...
Yeah. And I think we're eating cigarettes.
You are literally eating cigarettes. You are.
Yeah. That's what's for lunch.
Yeah. They're not even fried. There's no dressing. They're just, yeah, you're just eating a cigarette.
I'll have what she's having.
Yep.
I guess.
Mine is another person who Broadway star, but also TV legend. So this works out well. Dick Van Dyke.
Oh, my heart.
I
bow down to you.
Again, thankfully, is not dead. I love Dick Van Dyke. You know, as we all know, Mary Poppins was like a cornerstone of my childhood. And as was the Dick Van Dyke Show. And I had episodes of it on DVD. And I'd watch them. I loved Mary Tyler Moore. But Dick Van Dyke, some of his sketches on that show, just talk about comedic brilliance. And also growing up, I didn't have cable, but we had PAX TV. And they would play Diagnosis Murder in the afternoons. So after school, I would come home and watch Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, and then Diagnosis Murder. And he as a kid, to me, was just everything. Like, he was just joy. If joy was a person, it was Dick Van Dyke.
Yes.
And like Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. And it just, and then even going back to his Broadway world and Bye Bye Birdie, you know, the man could literally just do everything. And I think it's impossible to look at Dick Van Dyke and not smile. You know, he's just a human smile. And even now, how he and his barbershop group just go around LA and they'll just like, these old barbershop guys will just sing tunes to you in like whatever diner they happen to be eating in. Like, what an adorable, wonderful man. And I remember I was in a theater company once with a guy who was on Dick Van Dyke, or on Diagnosis Murder with him. And I was just, what was it like working with Dick Van Dyke for all those years? And he was like, you know what everyone thinks like Santa Claus is like? That's Dick Van Dyke. He was like, it was like working with Santa every day. He was like, he is nicer than you think he will be. Like,
and I think he's going to be so nice.
So nice. Yeah, he was like, he is literally the most wonderful person you will ever meet. And again, somebody who worked in the business forever. So I think it would just be like going out for lunch with the world's most adorable granddad.
And just
being like, you know what, Grandpa, like, tell me some stories and sing me some barbershop songs. And we would have the best time.
Can I come?
You can definitely come. After you sort of like, after B.
After I finished my lunch of cigarettes and sarcasm.
Yep. Then you can come for the most wholesome.
For pancakes.
And I think that's what, we're at a diner in LA.
Yeah.
Where he knows the owner and he has his regular booth. And we're going for breakfast. We're getting pancakes. We're having some nice decaf coffee.
You can try it. If there's something on his plate that you like, he'll let you try it.
1,000% only if I could try some of yours. You know, he likes. I just can't. I can't wait to get lunch with Dick Van Dyke.
I can't either. I'm so glad I'm coming.
Great. Put a smile on. Yeah.
All right. My number six is, excuse me, I'm just having a moment. It was all those cigarettes. Yeah, coming up. My number six. And before I announce my number six, just want to remind you all to follow us on socials at Theater Countdown, Theater with an R-E. Rate and review us. As you know now, we're not just bluffing. We will read your reviews aloud on the air. You can watch us on YouTube. Don't forget that. And if you join us on Patreon, producer Danny has a picture with Dick Van Dyke.
Ah!
He's showing us, which is adorable. Patreon. Join our Patreon family. Subscribe to the show. We have a lot of fun in the community that we are building. Join us there. It's super cheap is the point. So you don't want to miss out on all of that. And with that, my number six Broadway star, television star, workingest actor, I think, of our generation, and has just kind of become this wonderful icon of free-spiritedness. Mm-hmm. I want to go have lunch with Alan Cumming.
Fun.
I'm going to have lunch with Alan
Cumming. Is it lunch or is it...
It's...
Is, Or like, it's late lunch night. At 1 a.m. I was going to say.
It's late night.
You don't eat without coming in the light of day.
No. So I just think what he did in Cabaret twice was absolutely break the bank brilliant.
Legendary performance.
He's a Shakespearean actor. His one-man Macbeth was like all the rage. And what was it, so a BAM?
Good. It was. I saw it. It went to Broadway. Did it?
It went to Broadway
54.
As well. Yeah.
It was so good. It was so good.
He just did a one-night concert at Studio 54 like 2 weeks ago, and I actually got to see that show because he was our special guest entertainer on the last cruise.
Oh, cool!
And so I actually got to hang out with Alan Cumming a little.
So you
bit.
Have had lunch with him?
I've not had lunch with him, but this is how cool he is: that I've had a little time, a tiny bit of time with him, and now I just want more lunch.
That's
He's
fair.
Just such a free spirit, you know, 3 a.m. lunch.
Yeah.
He's a free spirit. He owns a piano bar downtown, Club Cumming, that stemmed from his epic parties he used to throw in his dressing room when he was in Cabaret.
And I've had friends who went to those parties who were like, they were bonkers. Like, he would
called
literally
it
throw
Club
parties
Cumming.
After the show.
He says in this one-man show he was doing, he's like, if the show itself is called Alan Cumming is not acting his age. And he said, you know, people always talk to me about how I stay so youthful. And he's like, the truth is, I just surround myself with young people. And I like to hang out with young people and hear what they're doing. And he's a style icon. He's a brilliant actor. The Spice Girls movie, Nightcrawler in the X-Men, need I go on?
Oh, my God. The Bacchae.
The what?
He did the Bacchae, Greek tragedy as well. The man can literally do everything.
He can absolutely do anything. He just hosted The Traitors on Peacock.
The number one reality show on TV right now.
Where all he did was wear incredible fashion, Scottish tartan outfits, and say cryptic things. And
capes
it was
and
too
hats.
Much fun. But he was such a delight to meet in person. If you go to my social at Ben Does Broadway, you'll see a picture of us together. He is the coolest of the cool. I just actually want to ingratiate myself to him to the point where we're actually friends and actually going to lunch. And also just like in awe of this man's talent.
Yeah.
He's Truly. Done it all, and his outlook on life. And I will tell you this, watching him do this show, this one man show, and the way he tells a story, and he's telling stories about Kristen Chenoweth, and he's telling stories about his club and Paul McCartney and Emma Stone coming to the club to sing in the middle of the night and taking them down there. He is just living life. And to watch him interpret a song, he's not a great, big, huge Broadway belter. He
it
has
doesn't
a
matter.
No. To watch, he was like singing songs by Adele and like just has you in the palm of his hands the entire time. He is so vulnerable and honest and real. And lunch, where I think for that 3 a.m. lunch we're having, probably can't say what we're having.
You definitely ain't having a cheeseburger.
That's for darn sure.
I don't know. Is it bad that my skinny. First thought, I was like, you're drinking the blood of virgins. Like, you know.
Sure.
It would be, but it would actually be like fruit juice. Like he would set the scene.
Sure, absolutely. Oh, Alan, call me.
You're
for
drinking
God's
the
sake.
Tears of chorus boys.
I think that's how we stay so young. Wow, I'm so excited to hear the rest of your list now.
Yeah, you too. You too.
And if you'd like to hear the rest of our list, you've got to tune in next time when we're joined by a very special guest.
Did you right.
Who actually has lunches with Broadway stars.
That's true. It's very appropriate. Finally, our guest and our subject aligned.
Aligned in perfect harmony. Carly Heitner will be with us, who you know from Picnic Playlist on the socials. She's a lot of fun and has some great things. And we make her play a game that... she does very well. I don't know. That's not selling anything. Okay. That's it.
Strike it from the record. That's it. Oh, my goodness. I love
Well, I've loved spending this time with you. And you. Adieu. And that's
showbiz, kid.